Yeah. So I really want us to think about what our ideas of enlightenment are, you know, what that looks like. Most of us do think of the spiritual teachers, of gurus, of a person sitting in a cave in India or on the top of a mountain somewhere. We have very few accounts of how people became enlightened. That's why I wrote my book, Autobiography of a Yogini. I mean, one of the things, I was raised Catholic, and one of the things that I really get upset about Christianity is that they have accepted, we don't know what happened between, was it 12 and 30, was it, of his life? It's just not acceptable to me. One of the greatest beings to be on planet Earth, and we don't know. It's not okay. I would be demanding it of the leaders, or I would be demanding it of him. I need to know. And you know, many of us have some accounts of what occurred, but on the larger scale, it's not known, and it's accepted as not known. And that's really not okay. Something was happening from 12 to 30. And for many of us, we understand that he was becoming the Christ, becoming that. So we don't know how he became that. And we have very few accounts of how saints or mystics became their higher selves. So that's why I wrote the book, and that's why I like to talk to people, because you, in this lifetime, can shift from your normal, regular self to the fullness of who you are. I like to say it's like taking off that Clark Kent jacket and being the super person that you are in reality. And each of us has had some glimpse of what that is. Yes, you know, you have a feeling inside. You meditate. You go into a deep space. Sometimes I work with people and they say, well, I had it once and now it's gone. And they spend their whole life very upset that they don't have that thing, whatever that was. And I just try to say, it never can leave you, because it is the core of who you are. It is what we all are. Now, we come on this planet and we live these lives that dumb us down. That's one way of saying it, right? It makes us small. Our educational systems, our parents' ignorance, that, you know, they don't know that they're more. So how can they tell you to be more, expect you to be more? I hear examples. There's a woman who in her 80s created these beautiful Orosoma, I think it's called. They do wonderful things. But when she was a young girl of three, she was British, and her father, they lived in a home with a beautiful garden and forest behind. And at 3 years old, her father would send her out to the backyard into the forest and say, find the plant that heals a stomach ache. And at three, she would go out, and then she'd come back and find the right plant. And they'd say, now go out and find the one that heals a headache. And she would go out and come back with that right plant. Now, how many of you think you have that ability to do that, right? But this was just a regular kid. But her father knew that she could do that. How many of us have hunches about, oh, I should call so-and-so, right? Don't we all have that feeling? I've got to call them, right? And how many times do we follow through on that? Most of the time, not. This is your own divine voice wanting you to make a connection of importance. But we have other important things to do, right? We have these lives to live and things to take care of and paying the bills and doing all those things. So we do not pay attention to that still small voice. You know, all the words that are said in the Bible, I love it. When I started my teachings, and everything that I teach is straight through me. I stopped reading 15 years ago. I only read now if there's something that Spirit can't tell me directly, and it's like some big gap in my karmic life that I have no knowledge of. But most things just come right through. And I read quite a bit for 20-some years prior to that. But what we're reading is not the true knowingness of something. And when we begin to pay attention to that voice within, you know, that's what I was saying. When I started teaching, I was amazed at how many things sounded like things I had heard somewhere, you know, but coming through in my voice. Because truth is truth. You know, it's truth. And so it doesn't matter, but it's going to relate in a specific way coming through me than it does coming through some other teacher. But it's the truth. And so this idea of the still small voice, I say it can be something coming across your computer screen. It can be someone that you don't like. It can come from so many directions. But this guidance, this divinity that we are, is there for us all the time. But since we don't listen to it, it just quiets down. Why? If you had someone that was talking to you, and you were talking to John, and you were talking to John, and John was paying no attention to you, you just stop, right? He doesn't want to hear what I have to say. But what we can begin to do is to really listen, to ask. And I talk about enlightenment not for that mountaintop living. Although if that's your calling, then that's what you will do. But enlightenment is for our day-to-day use. This great consciousness that we are is here to help us with every little problem that we have. And even beyond problem, that's what we normally do, is turn to God, Spirit, Divinity, whatever word you want to use, when there's something wrong, something major, right? I know I hate to say this to the guys, but a lot of times people say, some men, they've never been in church until that chapel when someone that they love is really ill, you know, and then they go to the chapel, yes? But it doesn't have to be for that. And it doesn't have to be when we might lose our mortgage, right? It doesn't have to be for the major things. It's for everything, every moment. This divine essence that we are wants to guide us in the right directions for every moment of our lives. Say we're working in a job and we don't like it, right? Many Americans, that's where we are. And so on the one hand, I'm hating my job. But on the other hand, I can't leave my job because how will I take care of my family? How will I pay the bills? And so people stay stuck right there, you know, and 5 years goes by, 10 years goes by, and they're hating this job still, but they can't leave. This divine consciousness that we are has five options for you. It doesn't see this or that. It knows the entire picture, and it has the perfect one. Now, we can't see that because of our limited vision, our limited training, but this inner being that we are has the answers to everything. So the more that you begin to rely on that, to listen to that, to ask that, the easier the messages come through you. Oh, it's yeah, that should be the answer, right, to one of her problems. And as I said, it doesn't have to be problems. When I went through my transformation, first of all, I didn't know. And even though I had read 20 years of spirituality, spiritual reading, I don't know what I was reading. I thought I read The Theosophist. I did in the very beginning. And I did Science of Mind at the time. I did Jungian reading. I did High Christ Consciousness reading. But in the readings that I did, we really weren't talking about transcendence. about shifting. I think I was just reading to become happy. I'd had a very hard childhood, and I was very unhappy. So I was just trying to be a happy person. So when I shifted, I had no idea what was going on. Absolutely none. It was quite the powerful experience. I had a 2-hour experience where it felt like every cell in my body was crying from head to toe, uncontrolled. And I don't mean, you know, real cry. I couldn't control it. I was with people, and I was supposed to be looking proper, and I was very not proper. And then I had 8 months of my body being moved and turned and held in yoga postures so that this vibration, this kundalini energy, every society has every culture has a different name for it. So those energies that we are could be opened up in me. But, and the gifts started pouring through. And when the gifts started pouring through, I was just always amazed at the simple things. Like, I don't know how everyone in our cultures are taught to take baths or showers in a particular way, right? It's not too many different ways, but I'm sure each of us, our families, do it a little different. And we used washcloths, right? That's how I was raised. But when the spirit took me over, I no longer used a washcloth, just the soap on my body. And it was the little things like that that, you know, really amazed me at how intimate this God presence is, how much it loves just the tiniest things about us, just the tiniest corrections that need to be made. The week that I had gone through this powerful shift, I was in Montreal, and I was at a walking through a mall with people. I was kind of in la la land because all these things had happened, and I walked past a store, and everything was in French, but it said herbal. So, you know, that was pretty, I could read that. Even in French, it was fine. And so I walked into this store, and it was a big store, dark, with nothing but jars of herbs, huge, big jars like that. And it was low light, just to protect them. And my body just started going to different jars that were in French, and pulling them down. I had no idea what they were. And I started pulling them down. And then I got about 7 jars, and then I took them up to the counter. And the lady asked me in French, you know, how much do you want? And she just thought because I couldn't speak French that I couldn't say how much. But I had no clue because I had no clue what they were. So my hand just did like this, like scoop. So she took the lid off and scooped. She put it in the bag. And then when it was enough, my hand went like that, like, enough. Then she wrapped them up and, you know, gave me a bag and gave me the money. And from that moment to this moment, when I'm in a health food store and I need something, my hand just goes over all the calcium pills and will be guided to the one that's best. And this divinity loves us so much that it doesn't just pick the best calcium, but it'll pick the best calcium for my current budget. It's that detailed. Yeah, so that $30 bottle might be great, but today we're going to get the best $20 bottle. This is how intimate it is, how it knows us from the inside out. And it certainly knows us for those bigger problems. But the life that we're living on planet Earth has been created by these minds that are there from our limited awareness, from what we've read, from what we've experienced. But the experience even has been through a filter. You know the story about if someone ran in here now and ran across the room and ran out, there would be 20 different explanations of what occurred, right? So even what we're experiencing is going through the filters of our lives. So truth is a very difficult thing for each of us to know as we are. But this consciousness is truth. And as we begin to listen to it for our answers, we get the perfect solution. Because the world that we have created to date has been created from these minds, these limited perspectives. And we need a new earth, and I think we can all agree on that. Something new has to be born. So let's just take a moment and chant this prayer. I love the Gayatri mantra. In India, it's the most spoken, most popular prayer. This is the long version of it. They usually do a very short version, but I love it because you can focus on each of the chakras as you. So, you know, basically this prayer is saying, I am opening up. So Ombu is the root chakra. Ombu Vaha is the second chakra. Om Svaha is the third. Om Maha, Om Janaha, the throat. Om Tapaha, Om Satyam. I think I got them all. And so you're going to, what it's saying is, I am opening by vibrating to this energy, my entire being to be filled with the divine. And that's the point, to allow this great consciousness, whatever we want to call it, to come in me and be me. It's a surrender of self to spirit. All right. So you can close your eyes and we'll chant Om together three times, and then you can, of course, open them to read the prayers. Let's take a few deep breaths. To each center. Om Bo. Om Bo Vaha. Om Svaha. Om Satyam. Om Tat Savito Varenyam Bhargo Devasya Dhimahi Diyo Yonaha Prachodayat. So we ask this great consciousness to merge into us, to assist us in every aspect of our lives. We want a greater life. We want the highest life that we came on earth to be, to express. And yet there is much more of us available to create that life. So I'd like for you to think about what you have thought of as an enlightened consciousness. What that vision is. And I want you to let it go. I want you to understand. You know, this is why they call it stepping through the veil. It's not a curtain. It's a veil. It is so close to who you are now. You're not going to shift and, you know, yes, some will see your aura. If I cleanse for a week, then everybody's, oh, there's a light that came on, right? And if I do 2 days of yoga, the Shakti is pouring, but then I'm up till 3 in the morning. That's not the life that I want. I'm buzzed. I'm like that. What I offer on this planet is what I came for. I know the hearts of every person that comes to me, and I offer that to them for healing. And I know what it was like before I shifted and what it's like after I shifted. I know why I shifted and other people didn't. And so that's what I have to offer. And I don't have to be the healer anymore. And I don't have to, you know, I used to see past lives. And if I do greens for a week, all your faces start changing. It's not a requirement. I had many years of that kind of energy. But right now, the power that I need to express is done in my teachings. So I want you to be willing to let go. We give thanks for all the teachers that we've had. We give thanks for all the beings on all the planes who have gotten us to where we are now. But you know, this divinity is ever expanding. It is unknowable. It is vast. And so any idea that you have of what that is limited. It just is. I know most of us in this room are over 40, so I can say this with ease, maybe not all of us, but most of us. For those of us over 40, maybe not this gentleman here sitting from India, but for the rest of us, when you say the word God, you still see the man in the sky with the white beard. You know, it's like that, this association, even if we're conscious. You know, it's in the DNA almost, that vision. Michelangelo, was it, or Da Vinci, whoever painted that? It's there, so deep. So even though we may be very aware that that is not the truth of that word, it still limits us because of these deep-seated beliefs. And that I often use other words because everybody has a definition of that word. I remember once about 30, 25 years ago, I was watching a foreign film, and this was well before the conflicts in the Middle East were at the point that they're at now. And it was a Iranian film, I believe it was. And they were speaking Arabic, and it was subtitled, and the guy said something, something, Allah, something, something, right? And the subtitles were something, something, God, something, something. And I remember, you know, being a little, oh, right, yes. But I know now that many places here in America would never accept that term, Allah, to mean what we say, God, right? We'd have a fight if I was in some particular places. So the terms stop us from the vibration that it is. So we want to let go. And we give thanks for those beings who have helped us. But the bottom line is, it is us. And we can use those to bring us in, but that must be the place at which we release them as well. Because I am that I am. These are words that we have to begin to say. I think of the example of, is anybody in here a doctor or a lawyer? That's my better one. Any attorneys in here? Okay. So you think of someone when they're a child, they're not necessarily thinking, I'm going to be an attorney when I grow up, right? But you go through school and you go to undergraduate and you start thinking, oh, what do I want to do? Oh, maybe I might go into law, right? But they're not an attorney, right? And they don't feel like they're an attorney. So they take the bar, not the bar, the LSAT, and they get accepted into law school, and they're in law school, but they're not an attorney, yeah? And then they go through, and they graduate, and then they take the bar, and they pass the bar. And they can say they're an attorney, but really it's not until you've practiced some cases, you've won some cases, or you've written these briefs that a person can really begin to feel, I'm an attorney, and hand out that card with that knowingness. So how difficult do you think it is to say, I am God, I am the divine? You've never said those words. I was sitting on a plane once in India going from, so you can tell me whether or not this is widespread, but I was my first trip to India, and I was going from Bangalore to Delhi to catch my plane back to the United States. And there was a young Indian woman sitting next to me, and it was a commuter plane, so the seats were very tight. And she asked me where I was coming from, and I told her my guru at the time and his ashram, and she had heard of him. And she stopped, and she looked at me real close, and she said, oh, I've heard about him. And she looked me in the eye, and she said, is he God? Now, he had already revealed to me maybe 6 months before that he was everything that I had ever prayed to. And so I could look her back and say, yes, he is. But what American can ask that question? It's not something that could come out of our lips. We've been taught there was one man who came here who was that. It's too big for our little minds to comprehend or to speak. But she knew that some beings on this planet can become one with God. And she wanted to know, is he one? Has he done that? In order for us to open a path for the merging of our little selves with our big selves, we better say, I am. I am. Start convincing yourself. You know this in your reading, but you need to know it in your life, in your day-to-day experience. You need to be thinking about what that is. I'm an attorney. I'm becoming an attorney. I'm an attorney. I did that. Use that same beautiful will that you have to know the truth of who you are. I am that. I am that great consciousness. And begin to pour your heart into it. Now, I know in the Theosophical Society, I was speaking with someone earlier this week, and she shared with me that if there was an Indian equivalent, this would be the Raja path, the and wisdom, right? And I was pretty much a left-brainer. I was a researcher and a statistician and very much, I wouldn't call myself an intellectual, but I read a lot. That was my, education was my thing. And yet, they say the fastest path is bhakti. So I'm not saying don't read, but I am saying that this heart is a direct way in. What we experience on this earth, as far as love is concerned, we experience it with the one, right? That woman, that man who was really, you know, the love of my life, right? Or maybe he or she didn't show up, but he's coming, right? But usually there was someone, the love of my life, yeah? I'm gonna suggest that you begin to fall in love with your own divine self, the way you love that external being. That's who wants the love. That's who wants your attention. That is who you need to honor and adore. And to the extent that that person, I did a session with someone today, and they said, this person, you know, they're the deepest love. And I said, well, what that person did was bring out your deepest love. They're only bringing out that love that's within you. You know, they're opening that up. I liken it to when you, I don't know how many of you are parents, but when you first held an infant or a puppy, you know, something precious, there's this wellspring of love that comes out of us naturally. This is why the Christ was shown with the open heart. That same love, that same vibration that most of us only experience when we're, you know, we only allow that to be given up in that way when we've got this precious thing in our arms or this sweet puppy. But it's, where is it coming from? Right here. It is who we are. And the more that we delve into that, the more that we say, this love is the divine love, we allow this merging to occur. We get out of the head and come into the heart. This beautiful head of ours should just be empty. It just can be a perfect, pure space. I rarely have anything going on up here anymore. And when I do, I'm on it. Like, whoa, what's that? And the things that get me, that, you know, that word worry, things like my grandchildren. If I see my daughter favoring one child over the other, ooh, I get a little, or, you know, I that will bring up a worry, and then I'll say, if I wake up the next morning and that's on my mind, I'm like, wait, oh, we don't do that. It doesn't matter what it is. We don't worry anymore. And then you do what you say, a prayer. You send love to it. You own it and know that there's a perfect outworking, but you don't let it rattle around in this mind. Because we all know that worrying isn't helping an iota. It is not. In fact, it's doing the opposite. You are sending your vibration towards what you don't want. You're fearing the worst, and we are nothing but energy. And that energy is creating that very thing that you're fearing. So cut that. Catch it. Be the watchkeeper of your mind. And just say, no, I don't do that. And then think of the opposite, what it is that you really want. Because it's like a recording, this mind. It's like an old record. The grooves are set. And I'm used to worrying about it, and I'm used to worrying about it. And in comes something happens that day, and it sparks that, yes, I should worry about that. There. Right, I can't pay that bill, right? Or, you know, and so it just, but when you step in and stop this groove, you have control over that mind, believe it or not. I mean, sometimes we don't see it, right? But when you do catch yourself in that pattern, you end it. You say, I'm not doing that. And the more you say that, the more it stops. And then when that thing comes in, from that day, it has nothing to connect to, and it just drops, and then those things stop coming, and this is how it works. So we want to keep this mind as clear as possible so that you really begin to hear the divine mind that will just guide your path so perfectly. I remember I was living in Santa Fe. This is a crazy example, but I was living in Santa Fe, and my kids were in Grand Junction. We were talking about Colorado earlier. And I was doing something in Denver, and I was on the highway. I said, well, now that I'm in Colorado, I'll go visit them. And it's just one highway, Highway 70, that goes straight across Denver from the west, where Denver is, from the east over to the west. But it's a 70, 75 mile an hour stretch. It goes for 5 hours. So I'm going 70, 75 down this freeway. And all of a sudden, this voice screams inside my car, move here. I mean, loud like that. I was like, okay. I mean, I've never heard anything that loud. Move here. I wasn't even thinking about moving. But I think it was because I was going so fast that if I didn't look up, if it really didn't get my attention, I would have missed what exit it was and where I was supposed to move to. So it was like, at 70, you got to be quick, right? So it got me that it can be that loud or so subtle that it's just a feeling. But truth is there to guide our every move, and it has wanted to. We just haven't opened up to it. So I want you to think about what it is that you really want. And I want you to go into prayer every evening and ask, if this is good for me, show me the way. All right? Just one thing. We want to know the answers to, yes, reveal consciousness to me, reveal the universe to me. But the power is to learn to connect to that wisdom. You've got to learn how to hear it. You've got to learn how to trust it. You've got to learn how to believe it. So you think of something that you really desire. And then, you know, they say, like a little child, that's how you have to ask. I always think about, you know, when you're 5 years old and you're on your knees praying at night, that is the energy from which you want to sincerely ask for help. And from that space, I'm not saying you have to get on your knees, but you know what I mean, be in that pure innocence, pure expectation, pure love. Asking for what you want, and then be still and wait for an answer to come. And it can come from anywhere. But when it comes, you must act on it. You must do the thing it says. Now, for many of us, this answer is probably the opposite of how we have thought to answer the question, to handle the situation. And so we would never do that. But the only way to know how close this divinity is to you, how much it is available to you, is to follow through on its promptings, on what it tells you to do. That's the only way you know. And then what you want to do is slowly, slowly ask more and wait and act. So you want to prime this pump, prime this connection between you and your own God self. Now, I'll share with you the reasons that I know I shifted, because I was not looking for anything, as I said, but to be happy. Yes? But over the years of all my spiritual reading, I began to have a very personal relationship with spirit. The first line in my book is, God seduced me, you know? It was like, I know how to get her, you know? Let me give her something she really wants, you know? Let me get her. And so as I developed this relationship, which is what I'm talking about, and I don't know that I was really asking and listening, but this love, I began to feel comforted, right? So I trusted it. And there came a point when I wanted to know, well, I asked this question. If the birds and the animals come on this planet and live a perfect bird life, a perfect animal life, what is up with mankind? Why is it so tough for us? Why do we struggle so much? You know, wouldn't this great creator love us as much as it does the birds and the bees? You know, so I just believed that there was another way. And so I asked this question, what would life be like, what I was alluding to earlier, if instead of turning to the divine for the big things in life, what if I gave it over 24/7? I don't even know what I was thinking or what I was asking. I think it was my researcher brain that really wanted to know. If it does this when I hand over my big problems, and it's so great, right? If you read it, there's some wonderful things that happen, yes? Then what would it be like if I gave it everything? Meaning this PhD mind not making the choices, not making the decisions. And I had just finished my doctorate, and I had been in academia for 20 years prior to that. So I knew that the next job was going to have me. I'd already been a dean of a college, so I knew I'd be president of this or something, and it'd have me for the rest of my life. So I said, like, this is the perfect time to ask this question. And I did. And I just stopped. And the bills kept coming. Everything kept coming. I had ended my research position at the university when I finished my doctorate. So there I was. I was a single mom. I was just there. But I wanted to know. And I just sat. So it's not like becoming a homeless person or anything. This was a conscious knowingness, wanting to knowingness. And I just let each thing come. And I was scared, I was shaking in my boots, because the old me would have jumped in and solved it, whatever it was. But I didn't. I just said, oh my God, oh my, whew, okay, I'm still alive. And then the next thing would come, oh my God, oh my God, oh my, whew. And at the end, and I'm not recommending this to people, but this is the route I took. At the end, I saw that it was all false. All the things that we worry about and all of our attention goes to were not true. I was still there. Yes, my life did shift a bit, but I mean, it became great. I ended up going to India every year. I moved there. I became conscious. You know, yes, the outer shifted, but my daughter turned out beautifully. She's one of the happiest women that I know. And yet I gave up everything, because I wanted to know what this thing called spirit would do if it led my life. Now, I did not know about transcendence or transformation or enlightenment. I was just saying here. And yet that's what happened. So that was one thing. I consciously asked, yes? And the other thing is I had fallen in love with God, like lover. I really loved it. I really was so appreciative of it. It was my best friend. It was. Well, now it's what I am, so, you know, it's kind of hard to say it. But back then, that's what it felt like. This great, great love. And like my former guru, he has 20 million followers. And there were only like 12. In India that supposedly had shifted. And here was this young black woman going through all these things. People were angry at me. Why is she? She's new. Why? Yeah, because I had already given myself to the divine when I came to him. And between his vibration and my open heart, it happened. So I'm asking you to hear that regular people like you, like me, can merge into that oneness, into the awareness of that oneness, because we already are it. It's just the release of the limited self and the owning. Now, I went through that powerful shift. I received many gifts. It was an unbelievable 8 months. And here's the other piece that I'd just like to say. But at the same time, I had all these powers and all this vibration, and I was a healer. I went back to UCLA. I was an energy healer. And at the hospital, you know, my work was 12 inches from the body. I no longer even had to use my hands. My third eye was so open, I would just stand above my patients at the table and just wave my head, and the Shakti would just pour out of my third eye. It was just amazing, these gifts that opened. And yet, I was still rageaholic. I had no idea what I was, because I hadn't read about enlightenment. But I knew I had all these gifts and powers. I could see people's past lives. All of a sudden, you'd have full hair and a beard. And I would just watch that, right? But then I was screaming at people, out of control still. And I asked a friend of mine, a Swami, an American Swami in India. I said, you know, I was telling her, I didn't tell people in the organization I was with. I told her, this is what's happening with me. And she said, Kamala, I wouldn't know personally, but her guru was Satchidananda. And she said, Satchidananda says, it's the consciousness that becomes enlightened, not the mind or the personality or the body. And I said, that's me. I had merged into the all, but the poor little human me was still a mess. And so we get to take that consciousness and allow that to shift those earthly karmas that we've come here with as well. But I'm good enough. Well, those things have changed, thank God. But I'm fine just holding this vibration and helping people, because that's a more important thing of what I came here to do. So I ask you to want it. To want it with all your heart. And it may come through readings. It does not matter. But there's got to be that, I want that. I love that. I'm willing to allow that. Absolute surrender as well. So I think it's 8 o'clock. And I think you get a feel for what I'm saying, that it is the truth of who you are. We don't have to feel that you have to become some out-of-body being, but to allow that great divinity to move through you as you. Okay. Thank you.
And we do have time for questions. So if anyone in the audience here has a question, just please raise your hand and I'll bring you the microphone so that we can record the question. But also anyone who's watching through the internet, you can type in your question and send it, and I'll read it out for you.
Kamala, you said to pray every night.
Yes, and yeah.
So I'm asking, then is prayer simply the asking, the genuine, authentic, as a child asking?
Yes, that's yeah.
So
I should watch my terms. I'm using them very loosely. I simply meant yes. Going in your heart or wherever. It's okay if you're still seeing the man with the white beard and that's your version. It's perfect, you know? And I don't mean to belittle that. You know, whatever is sacred to you, go in your heart and pray to that. Be it an external being, be it an internal feeling, being space. But be in your heart and ask. Very sincerely, you know, with that innocence. We've got to, you know, it's got to be all in.
So it's not really the process, it's the attitude.
Yeah, but it is the process, because we want to, like I said, prime the pump. We want spirit to know, I'm listening to you. I'm trusting you. I'm here. Mm-hmm. I'm receiving you. So not a process like that, but a process of asking with a sincere heart, listening, waiting, and acting.
Okay,
that's the process. But it's sincerity is a huge part of it, but really wanting to know. Yeah. Is that? Mm-hmm. Anything about anything. Eve, doesn't even have to be something I talked about tonight.
Oh, maybe. Kamala, can you just speak a little or give a little more information about the types of, you were in the ashram for quite some time, the types of, say, meditation practices that you did there, or what a routine of that life involved?
Well, that's what everyone assumes when I say I spent 9 years in India, right? There's an assumption that I was in the ashram and that I was studying, okay? It wasn't that way. I actually went. My teacher was having an advanced course there, but I went and had unbelievable experiences just being in the land of India. It's such a powerful place, yes? And then I came back. But, oh, I know, it felt to me, when I got on the plane and left, oh, I remember, when I was walking around India, this is just what was occurring, those first 2 weeks, I was walking down a little at the ashram, and a little old lady came up to me, and she put her finger in my face, and she said, "You're Indian, you're Indian." And I was like, okay, you know? And then a week later, I'm walking down some little village, little shantytown village, and another older Indian woman comes up to me. "You're Indian. You've had a lot of past lifetimes as an Indian." And I said to myself, oh, these people are nuts. You know, I was like, what are they talking about? But when I left that first trip and got back on the plane, it was as if my heart had been taken out of my chest, planted into the earth, and my body got back on the plane and came back to America. And that was even with my daughter, who was in America. But I was that deeply connected to that place, to that part of the planet, to that country. And so when I would return, I would just take apartments. I was just living in India. I actually wasn't studying. And I'll tell you, I was with my guru, my former guru, for 9 years, and I can't remember one thing he said. It was just this great love, just this longing, just this following, this pull that was coming to me. I remember when I came back from one visit, I was moved to rent the video Jesus of Nazareth, the old one with Ernest Borgnine and Anne Bancroft. I don't know if any of you remember ever seeing that. I don't know what made me want to rent that, but I did. And first of all, I remember seeing these actors looking at the actor who was playing Christ with this absolute love and longing that I had only seen recently between myself and the other devotees and the guru. I had only ever seen that look come out of someone's eyes towards someone else. And here were these actors. I said, they're doing a great job. How would they even know to look like that? They were acting. But they had this absolute, I love you, I'm with you, take me to the ends of the earth kind of a look. And then I remember this one other part in that movie where the apostles were packing. Oh, one of the apostles was packing to leave, to go follow him. And the other apostle is talking to him. And he says something to the effect of, well, have you told your family that you're going to be gone for a while? And he said, well, no, I'm just going for a few weeks. And the guy says something to the equivalent of, yeah, right. You know, you're a goner. You know, your heart has been captured. You will be following this being or this energy. until the end of time, possibly. And so it was more that. It was all that. He did have a powerful breath work that we did. And that breath work was also part of why I shifted. But I would just come to the ashram and visit occasionally. And when he was in town, it was more being in that vibration. But it was also the power of India. When I went back to the States and my third eye was open, it was my first time visiting Rishikesh. And I remember we were on a bus going from Delhi to Rishikesh, and I was having a conversation with someone the whole way, and then all of a sudden I felt this energy, and I stopped talking, and I couldn't speak. And I said to him, I don't know where we're going. I had never heard of anything. This is a long time ago, 25 years ago. I said, I don't know where we're going, but we are going someplace special. Because I felt the vibration of that town as we entered its portals. And that's where my third eye opened that way. So for me, it was all experiential. It was all a happening. So it's another way, but it certainly did happen fast. And that's why I talk about opening the heart and being sincere and asking this great consciousness to be you as you. I'm not saying that they didn't meditate a lot, actually. They did this breath work, and it was very powerful, and so it would take you into a deep state of consciousness. But the meditations that I teach, I teach an 8-month class on spiritual transformation on Skype, are more body-centered, just really trying to take you to that depth. And for me personally, I think it was great because I might never have been able to actually still my mind if I had tried. It wasn't that way. It was actually through deep breath and being in this body that the mind just got emptied. And then there was a place for spirit to inhabit, to be.
Is it mainly that allowing rather than resisting it, that energy to pass through or become one with that? Mm-hmm. If the mind is still, that can happen. But most of the time, resistance to the natural process is that's what stops experiencing oneness with the energy around us. Mm-hmm. Is that your experience?
Yes. There's a way in which we say, I'm willing, and then we aren't. You know? And vibrating consciously to this more, to this greatness, allows you to release that resistance. You know, on some levels, you know, when I talk about, you know, from that moment on, when I had that 2-hour experience, I was crying for 2 hours, and then I was at this event with the guru and about 100 people in the room, and I'm down with my shawl over my head with this unbelievable crying. And so eventually I heard everyone in the room stand up and leave, or whatever they did, because I was out of it the whole time. And so then it was quiet. So I got up off the floor and I walked to a back room and I sat down on a chair. And I wasn't seated but a minute, and all of a sudden my body stood up and walked across the room to the window, and I looked down at the guru. He was about to go to the airport, and he was at his car waiting for someone to sit in the back seat, which was probably me. But I could have cared less about the guru at that moment, because I was 42 years old at that time, and for 42 years I had been walking this body and I had not walked myself from that seat to that window. And I was astounded. I was secured about the guru. My body just moved across the room. Yes? So on the one hand, it can kind of sound like being taken over, you know, you're not in control of yourself. That would cause some resistance to allowing this spirit to fill us. But the more that you do allow, the beautiful things that happen to you, the great gifts that come, the way your life shifts and changes, you begin to trust it completely. And it only loves us. It is us. And so this apprehension of being in charge, and then it's not that you're not in charge, you're actually expanding. You're expanding. I give the example, sometimes I'm mic'd in here, so I probably won't do this now, but sometimes when I'm with a group, I'm choosing now. Like when I have those experiences of 8 months of my body being turned and held in yoga postures for hours at a time, it was happening through me, right? It loved me so much, it wouldn't do it when anyone was around. It didn't embarrass me in any way. It just, you know, when I was by myself, sometimes I would be held for hours like this. Hours. And further back, actually. And it wasn't until years later that I found out that I had a reverse curvature in my neck, in my spine. And Spirit was trying to undo that by holding it in the opposite direction so that it would curve in the right way. You know, so it cares for us. But so sometimes I will let myself, you know, so back then it was taking over me. It was doing what it needed to do to clear things in me. But now it's completely integrated in self, right? And yet I'm still consciously choosing to sit in this seat, yes? But if I choose, I can allow it to lift me up and take me to someone and say something to her specifically, yes? And I did this recently. I was at this retreat place that I go to for an annual cleanse, wheatgrass and greens for a week or two or three. And I met a woman, and she was in Science of Mind, or Centers for Spiritual Living, I think they call them now. And I don't hold back when people ask me what I do, and I tell them, and she's, well, how do you know? You know, and I know, I am. And so I said, well, like sometimes I'll just let myself be lifted. And I said, like this, we were at the dining room table and there were 120 people in the room and it was all new people. And I said, like this, and I let myself be lifted and I walked through the room and I just let this beautiful spirit guide me. And it took me over to a woman who was seated at a table with three other women. And she stood up and I just said, would you mind if I give you a hug? This is a very huggy place. And she said, sure. And I hugged her. And when I hugged her, I whispered something in her ear. I don't remember what it was. And she pulled back and she looked. And this place is primarily a Christ-based organization, a Christian underlying, but they have people come from everywhere, so they don't spout that. But that's really who a lot of people come there that are of that belief. And she pulled back, and she just started sobbing. And I said, what? She said, no, you don't know. And I said, what? She said, no, you don't know. She said, I said to God this morning, in fact, I wrote it down, I want you to speak to me directly today. And she had gotten her message. Because it's one. It's one mind, one consciousness. God spoke to her directly and told her what she needed to hear. It's one consciousness, one vibration. And we all are that.
So when you had that kind of awakening experience, was there changes that took place physically, mentally, and emotionally during the course of time after that?
Well, I would say on those other levels, that was definitely in the course of time. It's a beautiful thing, this life, this will that we have. We have to consciously allow this light to change those things. You know, karma is. And I used to say, you know, if you chose to incarnate as a person of color anywhere on planet Earth in the last 500 years or more, probably, you are automatically in the bottom 10% of the financial stratum. That's just truth. You don't have to be too witty to figure that one out. Any color, anywhere on the planet. So those of us who took that on have that big karma, and then maybe our own personal family karma. You know, as I said, most my white friends, 80% inherited money or a house or something. My black friends, 10%, 15%, right? So it's a whole different set of things to step into in the lifetime. So for me, finances, big issue, big karmic issue on that great level and on the personal level, yes? And so the way, one of the things that I have been offering to disadvantaged populations, transitioning populations, is that as I work with my clients who have, I see the differences in how they think, how they feel, how they speak, how they act, how they hold this idea of money, yes? And it's very different from those who don't have, and very different from, say, my own karmic patterns, yes? And so as I open this great spirit to that particular issue, say, that's, you know, you can, I don't know if you call that personality or my, I think it's a lot of all of it, you know? How much tension do you carry in your gut, you know, feeling-wise, if you don't think you can pay your bills, right? And what kind of worry patterns you have in your head. My clients that have, you know, if they want to take another course with me, then I'll say, well, you know, it'd be great if you take the individual course, but that costs a lot more money. And they'll say things like, oh, the money will come. And I love that. What a beautiful flow, right? Oh, the money will come. Yes? Now, people who don't have don't think that way. They don't feel that way. There's not that ease in the in the emotional realm, in the physical body, in the thought patterns, yes? So what we want to do is open that consciousness and say, show me what in me needs to change so that the wealth that I may need to do the teachings that I've come to do, or to have the things that I love. I mean, we're on planet Earth. We're supposed to be enjoying this place. I remember I had some friends in a particular spiritual group, and this guy, he was older, and I was joking with him, a human being joke, and I said something to him like, well, you know what they say at the end. They say, how much fun did you have? How much joy did you have? And he looked at me and he said, oh, no, really? You know, he had been so serious on his spiritual path that he was kind of missing the joy. So one of the things we want to do is have the things that we want to have so that we can enjoy the earth. But I have had to own this consciousness in that arena. Show me what it is, what childhood patterns that need to be released so that abundance can come. What thought patterns, what ways of being, how do I talk about it, how do I think about it? That it will share it with us, but unless you know, this is not enlightenment. You know, people used to say to me, well, why is India so spiritual? It's so poor. And I'd say it's apples and oranges. you know? You can be conscious, but you don't have to have all those earthly things in order. You don't pop out and then, oh, life's a breeze, all planets. You look at the greatest master, what he had to go through on this. I would say that was not an easy life, right? We'll take our problems over that, right? And he like was in the Garden of Gethsemane saying, do we really have to do this? You know? So we're all dealing with things that we have to move through. This beautiful greatness that we are can assist us in moving that. So, you know, it doesn't mean you don't have to work through your things, but it's available to us. And as you say, show me, it'll clear the path for it. Okay? Welcome.